Welcome to The Kicker. I'm your host, Megan Greenwell. Today, my guest is Ithar El-Khatatni. She's a fantastic journalist who's now the editor-in-chief of Documented. Documented is a New York-based newsroom that targets immigrant readers, and they do both big investigations, news stories, and a lot of service-driven journalism, really trying to meet their community where they're at. That means they're big on WeChat and WhatsApp and Nextdoor. And I was really curious to ask Ithar how they're reaching communities of people that I think far too many newsrooms write off as unreachable. Ithar El-Khatatni, welcome to The Kicker.
Hi, so happy to be here.
I'm so happy to have you. We did a fellowship together. Was that 2017?
Yes, just a little under a decade, but yes, it was
2017. Oh my goodness. Okay. And now you're running a whole publication and I'm a freelancer doing my own thing. So we've taken opposite paths and I love that for us.
Yes, it's been a turbulent decade.
Yes, I should say. One. Yes. Well, first, for listeners who might not know, tell me, what is Documented?
Okay. So Documented is a nonprofit local New York City newsroom that was founded a little over 7 years ago by two co-founders who were both reporting outside of the United States and kind of just really realized that the audiences they were covering, who were immigrants, really were being covered in languages they don't speak, in publications they were never going to read, and kind of really identified the need for a newsroom that directly serves immigrants. So in the languages they speak, on platforms that they're on, stories that they care about and really center their voices. So we're based here in New York City, where there are nearly over 3 million immigrants, nearly 500,000 of them undocumented. We publish in four languages, English, Spanish, Chinese, and Haitian Creole. And what really makes our journalism different is our community-driven journalism model, where we really center the voices of immigrants. We are on the platforms they're on. So we're on WhatsApp for the Spanish-speaking immigrants. We're on WeChat for our Chinese. We're on Nextdoor. So we really create our news products that are that immigrants are on, and we provide them with services, guides, beyond just our journalism, guides, resources, and things they need to navigate their lives.
That was a great overview. I want to talk more about all of that. First, I want to talk about how you got there. I'm interested in, like, your last couple of jobs were more on the strategy side. You were working on news products at Bloomberg, young audience initiatives at the Wall Street Journal. You were doing your own consulting for a bit. What drew you back to a newsroom and to this newsroom in particular?
Yeah. So I've been reflecting a lot. This is my 20th year in journalism. So I've had a lot of thinking this year. I spent the first nearly 7-8 years of my career based out of the Middle East as a reporter. So I covered kind of the Arab Spring, did the very traditional like text reporter from magazines to newspaper, and then the transition to video, producing, presenting, and then the shift to digital, which we all did. And I think for me, I've kind of been on a cycle where I spend a good number of years really enmeshed in the news and get really exhausted. So then kind of take a little bit of a kind of transition where I'm still in the journalism world, but maybe in news adjacent, a little bit of strategy, a little bit of product. Over the last decade, as I moved into kind of more newsroom management and the industry has changed so much, you immediately kind of identify the need where you're like, I know how to do great copy, great stories. I know how to manage a newsroom, but now there's a whole other world. You know, news product didn't really exist a decade ago. I want to look more at like sustainability, learn more about, you know, we can build things, but how do we make sure we exist? So I actually went back to CUNY. I did a program for digital newsroom leaders who kind of sit at the intersection of editorial, tech, product, and revenue. And that's kind of where kind of my shifts in career was like, all right, I need to really learn this part and think about how I kind of leverage that. But yes, I've been in corporate for nearly the whole of my U.S. Life. I moved here in 2013. So this was a huge shift for me. We were just talking about the office and, you know, I came here my first day and I'm like, oh, one big desk, you know, coming from Bloomberg, where I would choose the perfect banana every day. I miss that most. But I think for me, it was realizing, you know, with the world getting I don't even know what adjective to use here, but me thinking of why I got into journalism in the first place, really being about centering voices of people who are impacted, you know, afflicting, you know, the powerful and helping the helpless and voice all of the kind of big rhetoric we use around journalism, and thinking of the landscape and social platforms and impact, I really just kind of came to the conclusion that I wanted to be somewhere where I felt the work was very directly connected to the service journalism, where I could tangibly see how the work was informing and educating and helping equip people. And documented is so unique in its model, and I'm sure we'll talk about this a little bit more, in how our one-to-one conversations directly with our audiences, how we center our stories, often don't come from reporters. They come directly from the questions that are sent to us. A lot of our scoops, a lot of our investigations, a lot of our deeply, most deeply reported stories directly come from our communities. And then the way we measure that impact, right? You can tangibly see people who send you, be like, you know, this guide you wrote on how to navigate Move Your Court hearing online helped me not go to 26 Federal Plaza so I don't end up getting arrested and deported. Obviously, I joined 2 weeks before the new administration, before the election.
Wow.
So I don't think I quite kind of the scale and scope of the role, the importance of it was always so clear to me. But, you know, being an immigrant, immigration is only one component of being an immigrant, right? There's a whole lot of people need to know how to get housing, how to navigate their landlords. So the kind of shift towards how immigration coverage for this newsroom, obviously in the last year and a half, has been a train. It's just been nonstop. So I'm very glad to have ended up here, but definitely the kind of weight and importance of the role, especially for the communities we serve, became really a lot more important. But it also meant that for me personally, that impact and service journalism and mission oriented that I was looking for is very, very clear to me now.
I've always thought of you as somebody who has been sort of like on the cutting edge, right? Like when we did a fellowship together, I was a features editor. Like I was editing like long stories in as functionally the same way they were done throughout the 20th century. And you at the time were doing video for AJ Plus, which was like the vanguard of video. And I remember just sort of like hearing you talk about your experience and feeling like we worked on different planets and I should probably figure out how to get onto your planet real quick. I'm still really bad at video. But I'm curious about like what parts of the documented experience, you know, what the appeal was for you coming from, you've done all these sort of new shiny things, and this feels similar in some ways, even if the specific tools are different.
Yeah, you have a good memory and good research also. Yes, video will always be my love, by the way. This year I've really been focusing. So my kind of first year at Documented, well, I guess to backtrack a little bit, the biggest thing that appealed to me is the kind of transformation of the newsroom. So Documented was versus very much built up in a more features way, a more periodical is the word kind of we use a lot, where the deep listening that we do here takes a lot of time, right? So before we started the Chinese vertical, April, our Chinese community correspondent spent about 6 months doing 1,000 interviews, right? To really understand the community. Like if you go to Flushing, if you go to Chinatown, they'll know April. They know April, right? I went to an event in Flushing, which is way deep on the 7 Line. I was like, oh, I've never been here before. I should get one of those hair massage things. And someone showed up. She was like, you know, the 7 wasn't running today. She was this very elderly woman. But she's like, I got on like a 90-minute bus because I have to come here and support April because she answers all my questions on WeChat. So Documented for me what appealed to me, everything I've learned in kind of like my 20 years of how to produce, how to do create platform specific content, how to be on the mediums, how to not just package content for different platforms, tailor it to platforms where the story dictates the medium, all of that experience in production, my experience in audience engagement, the work I did on product, and then my very kind of nascent experience, the part for me that was still new, which is the grant world and making money. I'd always been lucky enough to be in places where I was doing again, the most innovative storytelling and media lab. So it was always in places where people were like, here's a lot of money, experiment and do what you want. So it's been very new to me to be like, oh, I can't just hire someone. I have to see if we can, you know, if we have budget to actually where the grant fulfills that. But bringing together all of those together, what appealed to me was the challenge was like, how do you bring all that experience? Which typically, you know, I had teams of 30, 40 people, but now you have a newsroom of like under 20 people. I had one part-time person who was also a barista at Blue Bottle in the beginning who did our entire social, right? So I was like, oh, I used to have a team of 8 people. Now I have one part-time person to do my Instagram, to do my Blue Sky, to do my X, all of that. So the challenge was for me was like, how do you transform a newsroom into in my first year to become a much more news responsive, right? I did increase staffing, but overall kind of increasing production significantly with your existing resources. How do you create a more consistent cadence in publishing? All of the very unsexy stuff of like your CMS and your editorial planning and your calendar and your project management and your photography storage and your naming conventions. And as we kind of start explore other mediums, which is what I'm doing this year, right? Video. So like what kind of scrappy kind of shoestring can we produce where we can still do the kind of authentic reporting? So I think for me overall, it was the challenge of doing something very different. So it's my first time in nonprofit, first time in local, first time in this scale. But I would also say I've been very lucky because documented, you know, we are thankfully in terms of kind of funding and thinking of how we grow, I've had that ability to really invest in the places that I need to strategically. So that's what kind of appealed to me. But I would be remiss to say, which is the core part about the journalism here, which is very much on par with anything I've ever done, which is I have worked nowhere that has the community-driven journal. We call it our CDJM, which I know we need a better acronym, but doesn't really exist anywhere. We talk about, you know, being responsive to your audience needs, you know, answering questions. But what we do here, which is having our stories shaped by directly by our communities, hasn't really existed anywhere that I've ever worked. And the way we do that, so we talked about the platforms we're on, right? But we have a significant part of the time of my community correspondence. So this is a role that honestly is like a magician role. I don't even know how they do it. They wear like 10 different hats. It's like a part-time reporter, investigator, guide writer, question writer, translation, being out about in the community, hosting events, trainings, webinars, creating platform specific newsletters, right? So on WeChat, creating everything from like job boards to event listings to, you know, how to celebrate Chinese New Year, being on Nextdoor, right? Answering questions, community moderation. So it's a combination of like 5 or 6 different roles. And it's incredible to me when I came here because I knew how much they were doing to realize like, oh, it was one person. I was like, it's just one person for every vertical. How do I grow that? Ideally, I would want multiple. And thankfully, we're a little bit like 1.5 people now per vertical.
Okay.
That deep listening and that responsiveness and connecting directly to our audiences, addressing their questions, misinformation, that doesn't exist anywhere. And it's so unique, we've actually started a program now to train other newsrooms in how to do this deep listening.
Yeah, okay. So I want to come back to the training. I think part of what I've always been really interested in with regards to documented is that like a lot of this sort of community focused work is very in vogue now, particularly in local publications. Like documented is not the only publication on WhatsApp. A lot of the, you know, a lot of the newsrooms funded by the American Journalism Project do a much better job than their local newspaper predecessors of getting out in the community, all of that. But it is much more at the heart of what you all do than any other newsroom I know of. So I actually want to talk about each of the 3 social platforms in turn, insofar as you can call Nextdoor, WeChat, and WhatsApp social platforms, but communication platforms. So I guess let's start with WeChat because you mentioned it earlier in the conversation. Tell me a little bit about, you know, some of our listeners probably don't know what WeChat is. So maybe set up what WeChat is, what you're doing there, and what it's doing for the journalism.
Great. So WeChat, think about it as a feed, right? Similar to your Facebook or any other kind of feed-based group. It is in Mandarin, so we actually over there were not named just documented. It's the Immigrant Chronicle by documented, because that kind of in the language actually translates the value proposition clearer to our audience. There are thousands of members on there. And really, so one thing to bear in mind for all of the platforms is similar to any newsroom, you're limited by what the platform allows you to do. There's always a pivot, right? Oh, suddenly you can't post this, you can't distribute. So one change that's just happened in WeChat recently, which is, you know, the way we post as a group, it has to be tied to like someone's ID, thinking again of how platforms shift, and you constantly have to shift your, and WhatsApp is a great example of that too with Meta. So on WeChat, we produce a newsletter. So that newsletter will aggregate our reporting. So we have our reporting that is actually posted there. So you can link and read it within platform or link out to platform. So we track obviously the metrics and data, see what that looks like. We post it in our own group, but then we also post stories. And again, a lot of this is manual and takes time, right? To go post it in multiple groups. We'll pair with specific content creators who, when tagged, also then post. So the same kind of amplification and partnerships potentially that then allow your content to reach, you know, different audiences. We post on it events. We post on it job listings. So things that are really important, you know, everything from like where to get free groceries, affording housing lottery listings. We're very clear our Chinese community issues around public safety, you know, homeless shelter being built, plans against a casino. So stories that we are constantly on top of, we share that. And then they also send us tips and questions. And every month, so we just had our presentation around the verticals, and we've reached up to 100% of our guides that are directly sourced from questions that our communities send in, right? We get hundreds of questions. We saw obviously a huge uptick in the last year and a half. So the kind of volume of questions we get, and a lot of it is obviously direct requests for help. So we kind of direct that into like, here's resources you can use. We also have a very unique partnership with the International Rescue Committee, which is kind of something completely separate, but also where we kind of answer those questions. So yeah, on all of our platforms, we share our articles, but share a combination of other resources. WeChat in particular, because the community is so closed, and the Chinese community is very different because they also have a lot of members who've been here a very long time, right? So you have people who are green card holders, who are citizens, but do not speak English. Mm-hmm. And that's actually a key distinction, which is we don't just target, you know, Spanish speakers or Chinese language speakers. We target those who don't speak English, right? So WeChat is a very insular kind of community, but what it means is you 100% know that you are directly reaching your audience, right? Because they're on there and they're communicating there. So mm-hmm. that's pretty much our WeChat.
You talked a bit about, you know, so much of that is service driven and like figuring out what resources people need and how to point them to mm-hmm. it. You also published from the Chinese community, like a big investigation today that I would love to hear you talk a little more about that story in particular, but also how do these different parts of the puzzle fit together? We'll come back to WhatsApp and Nextdoor, but I'm interested in like how you think of the ecosystem when you're thinking of serving, let's take the Chinese community for, you know, for the purposes of the example.
Yeah, it's such a wonderful question because it is such a difficult one to kind of draw a picture of like, here's how all the puzzle pieces fit together. So in addition to our news reporting, our features reporting, our guides, our questions, our webinar, we also have an investigations unit. So it's a tiny unit. It is now led by our co-founder, who used to be Max Siegelman, who used to be the last editor-in-chief before me, and one person who is here part-time, Lam. So under this investigations unit, we spend months kind of working on choosing three or four big stories a year that we want to more deeply investigate. Sometimes we partner, you know, we've partnered with everything from like the AP to the Guardian to smaller newsrooms, Rewire, exploring things with the Grist, places that kind of sit at the intersection of all of the issues we cover. But also our reporters themselves, just like any other reporter, you know, people want to be, you know, doing different kinds of work, right? They don't just want to be doing the breaking news. So April, who was kind of our most I don't even know what adjectives to use, April. She's amazing. All of them are amazing. But within all of her six different jobs that she does with the community, kind of pitched this deep investigation that she wanted to work on the side. It is 7,000 words that were published. It's a very, very long investigation. But a good example of how we're also thinking of repackaging, which is in addition to that big investigation, we have a short version, we have special edition newsletters, we have video packages around it, we have a behind the scenes, we have a standalone piece with one of the prisoners. So the piece really digs into the 1990s Chinatown, a lot of young immigrant Chinese men who got caught up in gangs, a lot of them, you know, who talked about being manipulated, who ended up with sentences of decades. Some of them have served 10, 20, 30 years, nearly 30 years now, and have been asking to kind of self-deport, the kind of language that we use today, or voluntarily leave, and are kind of stuck within that. So April spent months getting access to them, getting to the prisoners. So we think of our audiences in kind of levels, right? So I have my core immigrant audience, and this directly marries to how we think of impact on a kind of pyramid scale. So we have the stories where I can be like, oh, I did a guide on, you know, how to navigate with all the kind of fear around birthright citizenship now. What are your rights as a pregnant immigrant woman now? Can you still go to the doctor? Things that are very utilitarian and very tangible. But then I also have a secondary audience, people who are involved, who are lawyers, advocates, who work in immigration policy. They are the people who are kind of served by my newsletter. We have a newsletter, Early Arrival, that's read also by tens of thousands of people every other day. We publish three times a week. So those kind of, the secondary audience is the audience that we can directly tie impact to actual policy change. So we've published investigations that have resulted in policy change, that are discussed, that are kind of bills that are introduced. And we have an impact tracker. So how we kind of log the way beyond a traditional newsroom, which thinks of like, you know, X number of views or people have spent 2 minutes on your story. We also directly measure impact in kind of all the way from, you know, someone tweeted us or someone shared a news in their Hellgate, shared our story in their newsletter, all the way to like, oh, this happened on this level and we got this change. So our investigations kind of fit squarely into here. They are still within our communities, right? These are our communities. So, but the investigations fit more into, they are less directly for my core audience who needs to know about this new policy that was introduced. What does that mean for me? Or how is my community reacting? And more about people who work on that kind of secondary level information that then helps them. You know, my dream would be for something like that to actually get something changed for those men, right? That their cases are looked at, that they do get to kind of, even if just awareness and education on one level where someone will speak about it. And that happens a lot. We have many, Eileen, my immigration reporter, every day or every other day will post like, hey, our story was quoted here, or I went to this kind of hearing and they mentioned our reporting. So we think of impact very holistically and kind of like many tentacles of what that looks like.
Yeah, that's fascinating. Okay, I want to talk about WhatsApp. WhatsApp is in a lot of ways kind of the opposite of WeChat, because like WeChat is Chinese specific. WhatsApp, everybody uses WhatsApp, right? But you're focusing on a, to some extent, a specific community there on Spanish speakers. So tell me a little bit about what you're doing on WhatsApp and what the strategy is there.
Great. So WhatsApp, we started our seminal, which just means kind of weekly, a couple of years ago. And that was kind of the time of the first kind of in New York, you know, the buses and kind of our, the core goal of that was really to help early arrivals. So people, you know, who've been here under 2 years really navigate this moment in their lives and how to navigate that. And that's obviously evolved over the last few years, right? What does it mean now to be like 2-3 years in? There was a lot of like the Roosevelt Hotel. And again, all of the policies of the last few years specifically targeting, you know, a lot of that community. So Seminole is sent out to our community and kind of also a newsletter format. For those who don't know, Meta also has some specific kind of workarounds about how you can send. So it is not a kind of group chat. So it is more of a broadcast, right, where we send the newsletter and then people send directly to Ramel, who is our senior Latino correspondent, and Denya, who has now also joined the team. With a legal background, which is great for us. So we send messages directly to them. So people get messages. Last month, for example, we got over 100, right? So that's like more than 3 a day, questions that we get sent from the community. We get a lot of blessings. I love the little WhatsApp images reminds me of like my aunts, you know, how your aunts kind of send all those forwards on WhatsApp. But really WhatsApp for the Spanish speaking community is where we get a lot of questions. So last month we actually had 100% of our guides directly derived from the questions we get. It's also where we've built a lot of trust. So across the board, trust is the biggest thing. And that was something I wanted to mention when you were talking about a lot of newsrooms also being on social platforms, which is very true. But the trust we've cultivated with the individuals, which is kind of a two-edged thing, right? Where it's like they're connected to April or to Ramel or on Nextdoor. My Caribbean correspondent is Mr. Joseph for some reason. He's not Ralph. He's just Mr. Joseph. They trust the individuals. And because of that, we also, to give you an example, two examples specifically from our WhatsApp. So during the time a few months ago, when kind of young men were kind of being deported, or not just young men, people were being deported, and there was little very visibility to who they are. Our correspondent, you know, got a message from the chat, which was like, oh, this list had been released of like 200 people who'd been deported to El Salvador, not to their home countries, and now they're in prison. And through that WhatsApp, she actually got connected to another WhatsApp group of parents who were trying to find their children, right? So parents whose kids had been either lost in the system, picked up, et cetera. And she got connected to a father, Meruel, and the 19-year-old, his son, Meruel Gutierrez, had been picked up from the street in front of their home. He was 19, and rather than being deported back to Venezuela, was actually deported to El Salvador, right? So the story, we kind of did a whole story. We built the trust. We actually got to photograph the father. And this was one of our most kind of far-reaching stories of last year. It's kind of crazy to think it's already last year, where it was picked up, you know, by hundreds of other kind of outlets. It got huge visibility. I was on Amy Goodman kind of speaking about it. DHS actually responded because there was so much kind of discussion around it and released kind of here's, you know, and then we did another partnership with the city looking into like how, you know, what kind of authorities were kind of collaborating around that, what happened there, and eventually his release, right? So this kind of, this is an example of a story that really was derived from that trust and thankfully had a kind of happy ending. But then another great example is also, you know, someone sent in a question during as soon as kind of the arrest at 26 Federal Plaza had just started. So at the time, we literally wrote a guide, which was like, why you have to go to, you know, if you don't go to your hearing, you will be kind of, you know, in absentia. What will happen if you don't go? Because there was a lot of misinformation. And that's another part that we really dig deep into, right? So much misinformation on these platforms. And obviously, there's no way we can, just a tangent a little bit here, there's no way we can obviously address all the misinformation. So a lot of what we do is also training, right? How to spot this misinformation. Our investigations contributing writer just finished a series of half a dozen workshops that she was given in Queens, right? Teaching them how to actually spot misinformation, especially with a lot of AI. I attended one of them. It was so heartwarming. I learned from her the SIFT method, you know, like identifying how to actually, you know, stop, investigate, all of the kind of things you have to do. So beyond the misinformation, so we got this people saying, hey, we don't want to go to court. We were told we don't have to. So we first started out with a guide of why you have to go to court. But then that person followed up and was like, oh no, a lawyer reached out to me and told me that, you know, I can actually go to the Zoom court hearing online. And he shared a screenshot with us, which was literally looked like a full-on Zoom court, you know, judge, costume, everything, a picture of like Biden in the background. And through that, we kind of uncover these immigration court scams, which are up 27% just in the last year alone. So we did a huge investigation into these people who were trying to scam immigrants of thousands of dollars to go to these fake courts. You know, we did a webinar to kind of train, and that's also part of the reason why some of the workshops and trainings. And then eventually, once kind of that ability, we created a guide on like how to move your court hearing online, right? Where people can then literally message us. I have it saved somewhere in my like great folder that, you know, to inspire you on the bad days, which is literally like, you know, blessings on you and your family, and you've helped me and do all that. So WhatsApp is unique because its community, I would say, if I were to kind of paint a broad stroke, would say is probably the community that sends us the most questions. It's the community that is still an extreme kind of response to what's going on now. If you kind of look at the data representing like who's actually getting picked up, you know, all of the numbers behind, you know, especially young men of color, and the kind of neighborhoods that we're in and how we cover that, everything from like Queens to everything. So on our WhatsApp, that's kind of what the conversations have looked like over that last year. So like I said, tips, resources, questions. And then one thing which we've started exploring in the last 3 months, which has gotten a kind of phenomenal response, is video. And obviously run into the whole tech issues. Oh, how do we put video? It's not working on Android. Oh, we exported in this format a lot of kind of like the growing, which is fun for me because you're building. I've always loved building. But we also did a Spanish language survey. So every couple of years, we're really aiming to, because communities change, right? Like I said, 2 years ago or 3 years ago, the community might look very different, you know, the people on WhatsApp now than they were. So we did a survey of nearly 1,000. So nearly 1,000 people kind of responded to us, and kind of some of the findings were what you would expect, right? Like seeking out influencer or personality driven. Some of them were very concrete. People wanted us to send it at 7 a.m. in the morning because before they went to work, right? Mm. They want more video first content. They want more audio content. So we've kind of taken all of these findings and using it to kind of adjust a little bit our strategy, which also supplements and bolsters a lot of the things I was already introducing this year, which is a lot more kind of visual mediums, thinking of, you know, when I joined, there was this one ice photograph that we were just reusing in all the photo and all of the artwork. And I was like, you know, maybe we get AP Newsroom. Maybe I send out a freelancer. I consider it a personal success. And he'll laugh if he listens to the interview. I don't know if he will. My labor reporter, he was a very old school reporter and was like, I write. And I was like, maybe you take a photo on your iPhone. And I consider it a success that today he's like, where's my mic? It hasn't arrived yet. I want to hold a mic. Talk to people. He's like our mom, Donnie, kind of labor. He's an incredible labor reporter. So he's now also doing video and photography and audio. So kind of that adjustment into that. The data that we showed, people want that too. And I'll say one last finding from the survey, which was really fascinating, but also relatable. People want good news, right? Forget that sometimes, right? Great engagement is not just about, you know, here's all the horrible things happening and gloom and doom. People want, you know, summer jobs for teenagers, how to celebrate. We were too late. I was like, oh, it's Easter. We should have done Easter events. I try in all the events. I'm like, it's Valentine's Day. And then the pitches are always like a couple, which was torn apart in their green card interview. I was like, who did that story? And it was heartbreaking on a same-sex couple again. And then going to his green card interview and he was kind of detained. But maybe let's think of also stories that are still, you know, we are all alive, you know, people are still living their lives and figuring out how to go to work, how to send their kids to school, how to make money, and how to live. So making sure that that doesn't get lost in kind of the landscape of news.
Yeah. The fake immigration lawyer story that you mentioned, we'll link to it in the show notes. I remember reading that story and just like, it being one of those stories where I had to just then like sit and feel terrible about the world for 10 or so minutes afterward, because it is so bleak that people in absolutely desperate situations are then getting scammed so that they're losing a lot of money. And then they're also at a much higher risk of deportation because they're missing their real interviews because these fake people are telling them they don't have to go. Okay. It's awful. One of the other things I was wondering about that, though, is so when Documented started, immigration for a lot of mainstream media outlets was sort of this niche topic, right? It would be covered as a Washington story. It would be covered as a border story. There weren't that many mainstream outlets covering it in a serious way in terms of the lived experience. In 2026, immigration and ICE raids, you know, are perhaps the biggest story in the country. So how has that sort of changed? Like, what has the evolution been in how you think about Documented's role now that there is this broader ecosystem of on-the-ground immigration coverage?
Yeah. So I will say in some things it's been very clear. And one very example that comes straight to mind is like when we started our newsletter. So our newsletter was literally a collection of immigration news, right? Like headlines that you need to know around immigration. That was a few years ago. I'm like, in 2026, not only is everybody doing that and can do that, you don't even need that anymore, right? You'll go into your ChatGPT or Claude or whatever and get those kind of headlines. So it's by virtue of coverage and what that looks like, that value proposition of just like a collection of links no longer has in as much of, obviously there's still an element, we still do it because the trust for us and our curation, right? It's not just an aggregation, it's our choice. But the need to kind of supplement that with more insight, more analysis. So I've introduced a new expert column, Dara Lind, who's kind of an immigration expert, kind of breaks down for us every other week. Very complicated. You know, I've learned so much from it of like what this means. So really kind of evolving our newsletter. And we've just also finished a large survey that we just closed this weekend, kind of learn about who's reading, what they actually need from an immigration related newsletter at this point. But I would say for the majority of our coverage, because we are so clear on who our core audience is, right? Like I also even have a tertiary audience, which is the general audience, right? That's the audience that discover us on like Flipboard and Newsflip and Google Discover. And I don't even count those numbers in my metrics, like in our KPIs, because that's a kind of great audience to have. But my core is I'm looking for the low-wage immigrant New Yorkers, right? Mm-hmm. So because I'm so clear on who my core audience is, the coverage that we've done, we've obviously evolved it in response to this news moment, but because it so very clearly centers their world and their impact, you're not coming to document it. And that was maybe in my first kind of few weeks was one of my mistakes. I was like, oh, let's cover all the executive orders. And then I was like, well, no one's actually coming to document it to learn what the executive orders are. I'll never do it in the speed. I'll never do it in the ability with my like two reporters who are only able to do this. So being very clear, I started out with a policy, which is how we're covering the administration, and we evolved it in the last few months. We now have a newer policy, which kind of complements that, which is how we're covering this moment, right? Immigration enforcement, which what makes our coverage different? There is no world where, you know, even if I have all six reporters and community correspondents on every single day, I would ever be able to touch even like, you know, a small part of all the news you need to know. So kind of being very clear about here's our five or six pillars about what we're focusing on, right? In the beginning, we were like, oh, there's a raid happening, as with everybody, like, let's go. And then being like, we can't cover, right, every single raid. We have to look at the larger enforcement tactics and patterns, right? What's actually changed? While being cognizant of things like, are you actually releasing playbooks of how kind of people are responding? How do you protect your sources? How do I protect my reporters? So a lot of other policies that have come into play because of this moment, digital safety, security, new phones, new breaking news policies, live reporting policies, legal. So a lot of things that came into play here, but kind of identified those enforcement tactics, detention and what happens, surveillance, community impact and response. That's huge for us, right? Which is how communities are rallying, how the state and local kind of countermeasures, and also disinformation and rumors as a kind of sixth pillar. So kind of understanding that within those five or six pillars, our lens is always the communities impacted, right? So to give you a very small example, when kind of the Maduro news broke, and I was so excited in the beginning of the year, I'm like, all right, first day, I'm done. Maybe we'll have an easy start into the year, Maduro the next day, and then Minnesota a couple of days after that. But so when that happened, right, our stories literally immediately go talk to Venezuelans, right? We have that direct access. How are you feeling in this moment? Those who are celebrating, the complicated feelings, what that means. We looked at things like remittances, what all of these kind of, you know, big stories that we cover that are really our, like TPS, right? Temporary protected status, refugee. Like there are very clear documented, like in our lane stories that we really own. And we are so connected to the people directly impact, and that's always our lens. So even though, yes, coverage has exploded and there is news fatigue and there's news overload and news avoidance and all of the really sad Reuters digital report that every year I'm like, maybe this year the numbers of news avoidance, and nope. Within that landscape, the truth is the work that we do is still so unique because of who we center and the lens we see it and how we, you know, when I started kind of doing a lot more data, kind of data informed, you know, just being like, here's what the data shows. I was very kind of important to me to be like, but we're not chasing numbers, right? Because if we're chasing numbers, then every story I'll do will be an ICE story, an arrest right. story, right? We do a lot of unsexy stories, to be honest, but they're super vital. Like our one of our most successful guides last year was like on Omnicard, right? Like people need to know like how to navigate that.
Yeah.
So yes, I am cognizant of it, but we are continually kind of thinking of how we evolve our coverage to better serve our audiences. And because there's pretty much no one who focuses on the core audience being directly that immigrant audience, our mm-hmm. coverage is unique.
Okay, let's talk about Nextdoor. I feel like Nextdoor, your work on Nextdoor might be the most surprising to people. I feel like New York's Caribbean population is like one of the more often forgotten immigrant populations, certainly by people who live outside of New York. And doing news on Nextdoor, I think maybe feels weirder to people than doing it on WhatsApp or WeChat. So tell me what you're up to on Nextdoor.
Yeah, and I will just say on that, which is, oh, I guess we already had another ONA in March, but at the last year's ONA, the one in NOLA in September, Nextdoor was actually a sponsor, right? A key cool. sponsor of the Online News Association conference. And they credit us with being one of the few first newsrooms to actually be on Nextdoor. Mm-hmm. They now, just a few months ago, launched a newsroom account. And as of last week, just launched a journalist account, right? So that you can be a journalist on Nextdoor. So I don't think even Nextdoor in the beginning kind of thought that their platform could be used, right?
Yeah.
Even though there is a very clear, if you think about it, a lot of people, like I live in Harlem, and a lot of people, you know, are always like, oh, package got stolen. A lot of like, what's happening down the street? Yeah. So it does kind of make sense why news would kind of work on Nextdoor, but our experimentation on it was definitely a slow burn, right? It was very hard. It's, again, you can't really follow, you can't post, like in the beginning, you can only post. So Ralph, who was our Caribbean correspondent, was posting specifically, you know, in his neighborhood, in Flatbush, right? So that's kind of you identifying like where are the kind of pockets of where. And the Caribbean community is obviously a lot more fragmented. You know, it's mm-hmm. not Haitian Creole. It's also Jamaican. You have a lot of different. And that's one thing we've kind of also been exploring, which is, you know, he speaks Haitian Creole. We produce content in Haitian Creole, but the Caribbean community isn't just in Haitian Creole, mm-hmm. right? So how are we evolving that too? So yeah, it started out kind of very small of kind of one-to-one conversation, as with any kind of platform where people can talk. A lot of discussions around our role in community moderation and kind of how do we make sure that the discussions are kind of fruitful and allowing them, but also I don't have capacity to have a moderator. So what does that look like? So yeah, a lot of individual things. The Caribbean community also, you know, is a lot of culture and food. It's also a lot of visual kind of stories. So making sure we're also including that. You can use imagery on Nextdoor. You can start conversations. So as we kind of explored engagement in a different way, so again, that kind of feedback loop and that two-way communication, we slowly grew. And I think we've reached hundreds of thousands of impressions on the platform. And I will add on to this, it's still a very nascent experiment, literally only 10 days old. But one of the great things I love about being in a newsroom where you can experiment, which is we just decided, like, let's start a TikTok. And I'm very hesitant to say because it's not, there's still no clear, fully fledged strategy around it. It was an experiment, but we got 1,200 followers right away. Hundreds of people have started following Ralph because, again, there is a clear need. And again, we absolutely cannot be on every platform. And this might not actually kind of, you know, I don't know still how we'll kind of evolve the experiment, but it's very clear immediately, right? Oh, people have reacted and you've gotten kind of a really great organic response from the beginning, there is a need here, right? And you have to continue to like explore that need. So on Nextdoor, I try a lot of trial and error to kind of see what topics worked. Some of them, again, are very clear, anything related to ICE, anything related to community. But for me, the most heartwarming thing is actually kind of seeing, you know, when trolls come in, actually seeing the community respond and say, and that's where Mr. Joseph came in. And they're like, no, Mr. Joseph is very trusted. You know, I've been following him for a year and he always shares, you know, the good news, backs up the facts, including numbers. And again, thinking about the framing of stories, right? on any mm-hmm. social platform. The truth is, the percentage of people who are going to be clicking to your full story or even reading the whole story and platform is never going to be as high as people who are just kind of reading your blurb or your kind of intro yeah. to it. So how do we kind of distill the key facts or the news or the bullet points in that space? Cool. So yeah, it's obviously a very unique experiment. And by seeing Nextdoor kind of also pick up and introduce all of these new ways for journalists and newsrooms to interact also showed them that there is a significant opportunity there.
Yeah, I love that. I want to close this out by talking about the future. So Documented has introduced this Building Bridges training program to help other newsrooms. And I want to hear you talk about that program and how you're helping other newsrooms, but also like what role that plays in the long-term sustainability of Documented itself as a nonprofit newsroom.
Yeah. So like I said, this has been a very educational component of this role for me, and one I was really, we have an incredible development team. Rebecca, who leads our team, has taught me so much, and it's been fascinating. But definitely within, the last, even though I said we are in a very healthy situation right now, but kind of like anyone who's a nonprofit is thinking, that they love us right now. They love local, they love nonprofit. Next year that, all that press mm-hmm. forward money might be gone, all the AJPs, et cetera, et cetera. So thinking about long-term sustainability, right? We've introduced a small donor program. We've introduced multiple different exploring advertising opportunities, sponsored content. And again, a lot of it is still nascent and new, and in comparison to the larger kind of philanthropic grant making is still small. But where kind of sustainability and thinking of the future kind of really came together in a really lovely way is two ways. And I'll briefly tell you one before I tell the Bridley Bridges. One is our Immigrant News Coalition, which was also launched last year. So this is also us, El Tempano, and a couple other newsrooms that are immigrant serving newsrooms, Sahan Journal, Listening Post Collective, in kind of coming together to collaborate, learn from our experiences, share collective resources, as one example of us thinking of the future of working together with immigrant newsrooms. But the Building Bridges program really thinks of infrastructure building, right? At Documented, we're deeply invested in the importance of strengthening, local immigrant newsrooms, aside from like news deserts and newsrooms shutting down. The importance of immigrant newsrooms has become, as you kind of said, in the last couple of years, beyond people covering immigration, but to have newsrooms directly for immigrants is really, really important. So in a kind of association with our education team, our development team, and our editorial teams, we've built the kind of Building Bridges program, which is a national training program to kind of train newsrooms across the country in our community-driven journalism model. And the idea about it actually was born of a lot of people will come up and be like, are you starting a Documented in, California? Are you starting a Documented in Texas? And us kind of really realizing, no, because you can't just parachute in and create what we did here in New York. You can't just replicate it, right? It's the listening part. It's the deep listening. And then based on that listening to the community, building what those community needs is what we can teach, right? Mm-hmm. So it's not about creating a Documented in New York and other states. It was about us deciding the best way for us to kind of replicate the success of what we did here is find people or newsrooms who are already serving their communities and wanting to learn how to do that better, how to do that listening better, how to build news products for those audiences based on that listening. So we decided that in order to kind of leverage that approach and find out what works for them, we would launch this Building Bridges program. So we did a call out. The response was incredible. We got a huge kind of response, and we landed on, I think it's 16. I will feel bad if I'm wrong about that, but I think it is 16 newsrooms who are, I think, about halfway through their trainings now, where they are learning how to do that and actually started building their own news products. And our product lead kind of shares little snippets with us every week on the products they're building. And some of them has had phenomenal. I know he was just mentioning today, he's like, one of them did a survey and got 400 responses. And I was like, it's amazing. 400 responses within the scale and scope of the size of their newsroom is incredible. Like one of the newsrooms is like two people, literally. And I was like, how do you do this? Serve your entire India-speaking diaspora within those communities. So it's an incredible program, both in terms of how we think of our growth, of our impact being amplified across the country, but it also does represent a potentially a way for us to kind of be more sustainable. We had a smaller example of this where we taught high schoolers, right? A smaller version of the training programs and actually got funding through that, right? So revenue kind of diversification and thinking about that. But I'm very excited. Like, I feel like every time I talk to him, I'll be like, we also have this other project. There's so much that we are working on kind of concurrently. And I think the expertise that this newsroom has, the ability to multitask, the ability to kind of code switch between all of their different kind of roles is incredible. Everybody is such an expert in what they do, but everybody is also so passionate about what they do and being like, how do I best serve my community, and being able to pivot really quickly and being like, well, this is working, let's explore it more. Or in this one event, you know, like we're now exploring a partnership with like churches because we had this really great response in one church we went to. And I was like, oh, well, within this community, this is it, maybe with this pastor. Yeah. So really being open to, and again, that kind of flexibility, really can, we can do that here within this newsroom. And I love that because it means every day is exciting and tiring. Mm-hmm. But it also means that I know we are consistently, to kind of loop back on your question on being on the cutting edge in terms of that community driven or community responsiveness and deep listening. We really are at the forefront here in thinking, being deeply connected to our audience, deeply responsive to their needs, and being able to provide them with what they need to know, regardless of the platform, the medium, the formatting. Mm-hmm. It's in person, it's online, it's a, you know, an audio thing. And we look to continually evolve that work we do. So I feel very lucky to be where I am. It is definitely a calling, is the way you put it. But I'm continually inspired every day by this newsroom and feel very glad to be here at this moment.
Well, I can't recommend Documented's work highly enough, both for its inherent journalistic value and for journalists as a way of, yeah, sort of inspiring you and making it makes me expand my mental boundaries about what journalism is. And I just think that it's that's a very cool type of thing to have in the world. So Ithar, thank you so much for joining me today. This has been such a fun conversation.
Thank you so much for having me. And please, to all the listeners, follow us on Instagram, subscribe to our newsletter, do all the things. We're on LinkedIn, we're on Blue Sky, we're everywhere.
Get it in.
Mm-hmm. Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks for listening. The Kicker is a production of the Columbia Journalism Review. I'm your host, Megan Greenwell, and our producer is Amanda Dara. You can find The Kicker wherever you get your podcasts, and we'd love if you liked and subscribed. And we'll talk to you in 2 weeks.